Acts chapter 16. We'll find this dear lady in this particular passage. We're going to start in at verse 9. See what we can figure out. And it says here, "And a vision appeared to Paul in the night. There stood a man of Macedonia and prayed him, saying, 'Come over into Macedonia and help us.' And after he had seen the vision, immediately we endeavored to go into Macedonia, assuredly gathering that the Lord had called us for to preach the gospel unto them. Therefore, loosing from Troas, we came with a straight course to Samothracia, and the next day to Neapolis, and from thence to Philippi, which is the chief city of that part of Macedonia, and a colony, and we were in that city abiding certain days. And on the Sabbath we went out of the city by a riverside where prayer was wont to be made, and we sat down and spake unto the women which resorted thither." Let me stop there for just a moment. Paul had a vision. And in his vision, there was a man of Macedonia, and that man of Macedonia begs Paul to come over and help him. Paul, Silas, and Luke take off, and they head that away. Paul must have shared what he saw that night with some passion, because it says they immediately gathered their stuff and headed on, trusting that there was a necessity to preach the gospel over where he had called them to. When they get to Macedonia, they go in particular to Philippi. And when they get to Philippi, things aren't going to look as they think that they ought to be looking, as they've had this urgent call to come over to this place. For one thing, at this time in Philippi, there's no synagogue. And Paul, his regular pattern of things was to go into a city, hit the synagogue first. And from that synagogue, he would take people where they were and move them along in the continuum towards Jesus Christ. He would take them in what they knew and segue them over into the new covenant, you see. And so he had a way that he went about all of that. But here in this place, in Philippi, there's no synagogue. Also in Philippi, which tells us something else. If there's no synagogue there, a synagogue had to have 10 males, 10 Jewish males to open a synagogue. So evidently there weren't 10 Jewish faithful males in the city at that point to even open a synagogue. And so that'll kind of tell you what the atmosphere was in Philippi when these three showed up over there. And so I have this idea that once he got there and kind of found out some of these things that were going on, he might have wondered where in the world that man was that was in his vision. Where is that guy that's calling me over here, and where's the urgency with all of this stuff? To make matters worse or more complicated, history records that on the arches, as you would come into Philippi there was inscribed a law on those arches that was a law that was against any unrecognized religion coming into town. Verse 21 mentions that as part of the reason why these men got arrested and put in jail. It says that they were teaching customs which were not lawful, it says. Those two stuck together really bad. I must have been eating candy that day. It was not lawful for us to receive, neither to observe, being Romans. So there was a law against other religions coming into town. And that's what eventually landed those guys over there in jail. Which may explain why there was a prayer meeting going on out by the river on the riverbank, rather than in town there with things. So this is what happens. A group of women meet out there. This may have made that vision seem a little less urgent as Paul and the rest of them got into town there, kind of thinking, you know, that they were going to go into this, maybe go into a great revival thing or something, or that, you know, something exciting was going to take place. They go in, there's no synagogue. There's a law against bringing in some kind of unrecognized religion into town. And as they begin to hunt around for why they're there, they find out that there's a prayer meeting going on out at the river, down out of town at the riverbank somewhere. And so they decide to tootle off out there. And that's where things begin to take place in the story. I don't think that Paul was obviously discouraged or down by what he found in town, because he had an understanding of things that is far beyond what our understanding is for the most part. Because Paul understood that service to God is always about us being faithful and being faithful to what the Lord is, what the Lord directs for us, what he reveals to us, what path he puts us on. Just be faithful wherever he puts us. And so me thinking on the situation, I'm thinking, this is an urgent call. Where's the urgency? Where's the business that I've been called to with all of that? And sometimes we're looking for big things when we don't need to be looking for that big a thing. What we need to be looking for and being involved in is just being faithful in the little things that the Lord has put us on the path to accomplish. You see, the second thing about that is it's not us that build a church. It's God that builds a church. But a church is built by faithful individuals who are committed, who are dedicated. And when God calls a group of people, they ought to be faithful, they ought to be committed, and they ought to be dedicated to the Lord and the things that are there. And if they are, then God can use those individuals to build a church. There are too many churches and too many gatherings today that are being built on something other than Jesus Christ, that are being built on personality, that are being built on some kind of policy, on something other than what God is into. And so we have seen a lot of that in these days, in this greater part of falling away that has taken place around us. And what it does to me is it reaffirms those that are committed and faithful and dedicated to the things of God. And that's what it takes. For each and every one of us, we have to stay in that mindset about things. God will build his church, but he wants to use those individuals to build it with. And so in the absence of those individuals, then it's tricks and gadgets and imagery and all kinds of other things, smoke and mirrors, rather than something that is lasting and firm. And so Paul has that mindset all through everything. And so I sometimes build him up, build a straw man with him to knock down when he's no straw man in things of faith for the most part in that. So God builds his churches, but he does it in his way. And when we are hooked up with him in that relationship in the right way, then he can use us in all of that. Now let's look at the next piece. Let me go back. Verse 14. And a certain woman named Lydia, a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira, which worshiped God, heard us, whose heart the Lord opened, that she attended unto the things which were spoken of Paul. And when she was baptized, and her household, she besought us, saying, if you've judged me to be faithful to the Lord, come into my house and abide there. And she constrained us. So, he gets this vision. He goes to Asia. He goes into Macedonia. He goes into Philippi in particular. Goes to a prayer meeting on the bank of the river. Find some women there. There's a woman there that is a seller of purple from the city of Thyatira. In fact, the way the Greek reads here, as opposed to the King James in this, the King James says that the lady's name was, says a certain woman named Lydia. But in the Greek itself, that is said as a Lydian woman. A Lydian woman, rather than a proper name. in the original text. A Lydian woman who was a seller of purple of the city of Thyatira. Now that tells us a whole lot of information about this lady right there in short order. Lydia was actually a kingdom, the Lydian kingdom. It was pre-Persia, pre-Cyrus, coexisted with Cyrus and Persia, and then was taken over by the Roman Empire about 27 BC on into about 500 AD in through there. And so it's talking about a Lydian woman. And when you take a look at the Lydian kingdom, Lydian kingdom was the first kingdom to ever use coins. They made silver and gold coins. They were the first one to use that as currency. The Lydian kingdom was a rich, rich kingdom. It was a rich group of people that lived there. In fact, if you go over to Revelation and you look in chapters 2 and 3 there, and there are letters to seven churches in there. Of those seven churches, five of them were Lydian, in the Lydian kingdom, okay? Pergamum and Laodicea were not in the Lydian kingdom. And when you read the writings of the things that the Lord had against these different things and the different people that were there and the encouragement that he gave to these different churches in there, you can come out with a flavor of what the Lydian kingdom was all about. The Lydian kingdom was about wealth, and strength. Wealth and strength were the things that characterized that kingdom. When you take a look at the letter to Thyatira there, it goes into detail and talks about those that had gone the way of Jezebel, basically, in that particular letter. And what that's talking about in that is that this Lydian kingdom was big on things like guilds, G-U-I-L-D-S, what we would call unions today, okay? And so they had silver guilds and gold guilds and textile guilds, and every labor form had a guild of some kind, a union of some kind that everybody belonged to, okay? And so what would happen is that these guilds all had their favorite god or goddess that they pumped up as part of their union. And when you came into that union, you had to accept and take on these gods and goddesses that they kind of catered to in all of that. And if you would not, then you wouldn't get a job with that guild, okay? And so they could starve you out by you not being willing to bow down. And that's what he's talking about with Jezebel in there, in the letter to Thyatira, that they had bowed to these idols and should not have. And he's getting on them about committing to idols and bowing the knee to these and not standing up for the things of God. And so folks would get saved, but then they were out of fear of not being able to get a job or eat or anything. Well, they would go through the motions, but they're still going through the motions of worshiping this god or this goddess and all of these things. This was the Lydian kingdom, you see. Wealth and all of these things going on. And so this woman was a seller of purple. Purple, the color purple that and Thyatira was one of the places where this really flourished. This particular dye, this particular color, they extracted from shellfish, was where it first came from. Small quantities of it in shellfish, they would extract that and use that to dye garments purple. Well, the purple color back in the day was a color for the gods. And so those that would worship, or kings that would worship, would purchase these high-dollar purple garments for their gods and to put on the statues and to put on these different things. And so it was a specialty item that was very hard to make and very expensive to make, but with an exclusive clientele who paid cash for everything in all of this. And so the God business. And then later on, the kings got to be wanting to take that purple upon them because it was a very select garment and select color with things. And so it wasn't everybody running around that had on purple clothes. It wasn't like you could go to Walmart and get six or eight off the rack. These were specially made, high dollar, expensive things, kings and leaders, and only those people were able to even purchase it. But they paid dearly for it, and they loved the quality that certain ones gave. Evidently, this Lydian woman was one that knew how to get that done and knew what that was all about there. And so she had become well-to-do enough and prominent enough that she was able to move her business out of Thyatira all the way over to Philippi, set up shop, and still take contracts and move along with everything, which... I'm going to get to it here in just a minute, okay? Which is a huge deal. And you get to looking at what's taking place here. And so the Lord gives Paul a vision, says you need to go over here. This man of Macedonia is calling you over there. He took off like a shot. He gets there. Lo and behold, there's a prayer meeting happening outside of town with a lady, a Lydian woman that is there, that has come in, that has her own business, has her own clientele, has to worry about nobody's union, has to worry about nobody's guild in order to make her living and continue what's going on, who has, according to the context of the passage here, a household that is very large, obviously with servants and all kinds of things going on with her household there. They're at the same prayer meeting. Paul shares, she gets saved. She gets saved, okay? The next thing it tells us is that she goes home, she shares the same message with everybody in her household, and the whole bunch of them get saved. And everybody gets baptized right straight away. Here's the beautiful picture of this right here, okay? The beautiful picture is that this message comes in and God has already prepared a place for this message to be put in that is not contingent or that does not need any permission from anybody to have going on with all of this, okay? So, they have this situation and... This Lydian woman that attends to the thing, she's baptized, and she calls them all to come to her house. So they start having church at her house. See, she's not worried about losing no jobs. She's not worried about losing no contracts. God has set this up perfectly with all of this. Now they've moved the church into her house there. She is providing hospitality. You do recognize that Hospital comes from hospitality. That's what hospitality is supposed to be about. Hospitality is a place where you can get better. When you have the gift of hospitality, it means that you're opening up a place where others can come to get better, to feel better, to feel better about things. And so here is this woman who opens up, has church in her home, and makes it a place where her resources can be brought to bear and folks can be made better in all of this. I love the way the Lord worked this whole thing out. I mean, we thought, wouldn't that odd? Wouldn't that something? Wouldn't that lucky of them to have this taking place? But God's moving and working, and the collision takes place in this place. Why is that important? Think about the letter to the church at Philippi that Paul writes and how this church has grown. Here's the beginnings of that church. Here's the beginning that started in this Lydian woman's house and grew to be one of the most loving, one of the most wonderful pictures of a church in all of Scripture in Philippi there. It goes on in this passage here. Hit the cliff notes. If you go to the 40th verse, take a look at the 40th verse, last verse in the chapter in here. After Paul and Silas, they've chucked an evil spirit out of a girl that was making money for some folks here, or right after this. telling fortunes one thing, have been following them around, saying, oh, look at these, the Most High God, and they've been following them around for days. And Paul casts the spirit of a demon out of her, and the people that are handling this girl are crying foul. And next thing you know, this issue comes up that they're peddling something inside the city limits that they shouldn't be, and they get thrown in jail, and then, you know, all kinds of things happen with all of that. But the day they get out, that's what verse 40 is all about. The day they get out, it says, and they went out of the prison and entered into where? The house of that Lydian woman. And when they had seen the brethren, Now here we have just a short space of time of things that have taken place here. These guys have come in. They've been at this prayer meeting at the river at the riverside there. It says that this gal and all followed them around for some days, a few days there. Then they get arrested that same night at midnight. They get sprung, and then they go to the house of the Lydian woman here, right there, and they're having church, and there's brethren there at that point. And so that tells me maybe a little bit, not necessarily completely about the Lydian woman, but I suspect that she was pretty bold and pretty vocal about things and was instrumental in introducing some to the church, introducing some to the Lord. Now, I have no doubt that Paul and Silas and Luke had engaged with men here, there, and yon, but I ain't counting Lydia out either. I believe that she was invested and full in on all of that. And so I think it's just a beautiful, beautiful picture of God's sovereignty and the way that he pulls everything together in a plan. Like, it doesn't look like anything's going to work out. And then all of a sudden, one person gets saved out on the bank of the river. And the next thing you know, a church is started in a place where it would be illegal to do this, except for a gal that has connections. She has connections everywhere with very important, very high-powered people who want her product and who are not gonna tell her, you know, pitch this out, pitch these people out. We want your product, and we like what we want, and we're willing to keep paying for it. And now they're financing a church in this place, and that church just grows, and wonderful things begin to happen with all of that. I think it's just one of the most encouraging things to see some of that. And I hope you see that tonight, how encouraging that is, that no matter how little the thing seems to us today, it can have eternal consequences if we just simply follow on the path that the Lord has laid out for us, be faithful, be dedicated, be committed to the things of God, and just be amazed at how he works everything. I see also in here how hospitality can be a big thing. How hospitality can be a big thing. We're really hurting in the hospitality department right now. Too much fear, too many things that are going on with all of this. But boy, there's some people that need a touch. And there's some folks that need to be made well and made whole and be brought in and have a touch on. And so we need to be more trusting, I think. Be more trusting in the Lord for that. And a whole lot less fearful about the things that are spooking us in this day. So a lot of encouraging things and a challenge in the midst of all of that as well. To not count the Lord out, even when everything doesn't seem like it's all, you know, really hyped up and going somewhere with all of that. And if he wants this church to be built, he'll build it. But it's going to have to use the faithful, dedicated, and committed to keep on being that, if things will turn in that direction. I got a whole bunch of other stuff in there, a whole bunch of background and different things that would be really cool for you tonight, but you get the gist of where we are with that. Thoughts or comments tonight?